Bloomberg on the Economy with Mike McKee and Carol Masser. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
So let's continue talking about the economy, because we had a big batch of economic news this morning, starting off at 8:30 with GDP, that number coming in for the third quarter final reading, better than expected. We had weekly jobless claims coming in pretty much in line with what was expected. We also had existing home sales coming in better than expected, and a big surprise, Philly Fed, that number coming in much higher than expected. So here to help make some sense of it is Neil Dutta over at Renaissance Macro. Hey, Neil.
Hey, Carol, how are you?
I'm okay. You know, investors seem to be pretty pleased with some of the numbers that just came out at the 10 o'clock hour. Are they right to be?
Yeah, I mean, what's not to like?
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah, the housing market's healing. Manufacturing activity is expanding in the Philadelphia Fed District. Jobless claims remain low, which suggests that the labor market is holding together despite these intense budget negotiations in Washington. And, you know, the leading indicators were down, but, the leading indicators don't really lead. I think that's really a third-tier indicator, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. It gets reweighted and refitted and, often sends, false signals ahead of recession anyway. So, I think the leading indicators, you really just need to ignore that. Everything else was better than expected. And even the third quarter GDP numbers were revised up. And, and the revision was actually, somewhat favorable. Personal consumption was up, inventories were down slightly. That means real final sales are picking up a bit.
Does this mean, Neil, that people are going to start maybe revising their thoughts for the fourth quarter and first quarter, or no? Because some of the numbers that are out there are not really that great.
Well, it's all contingent on what your estimate is for, the fiscal drag in the first half. And that's really, there are two things to this, right, Carol? The first is how do people react ahead of the fiscal cliff? So there's a view out there that, the fiscal cliff introduces a uncertainty shock. I mean, this was work that was popularized by Nicholas Bloom over at Stanford University, that policy uncertainty was rising, and when uncertainty is high, it prompts businesses and consumers to delay irreversible decisions. So for example, consumers, when you go and buy an auto, it's a very big deal. You want to be sure about the macroeconomic conditions before you make the purchase.
Right.
Now, that's not really happening outside of business investment. So it's clear that businesses are definitely paying attention to this. So if you look at things like capital goods orders, those have weakened. But if you look at consumer spending, auto sales, for example, have been steadily climbing even as we approach the cliff. And what that means is that, and consumer sentiment, the U of M number aside, generally speaking, consumer sentiment's been rising as we've been going into the end of the year.
You're sounding awfully positive.
I am getting positive. to me, what else is there to worry about? Other than the fiscal, this is my message for this sort of perma bears right now.
Yeah.
Because that I've been relatively cautious.
I know.
For a long time. But, you look under the surface, unless you have a significant fiscal consolidation in 2013, which, frankly, I don't think should be the baseline scenario. The U.S. is the long-run deficit problem, and I think policymakers, while they're, going back and forth now, I think, still the baseline scenario should be that they don't do a front-loaded fiscal consolidation. So with the private economy healing...
So in other words, make some decisions, but they don't all hit us right away.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I think this is all political maneuvering, right? It's just a political game of chess.
But hang on a second, because you talk about, people out there buying cars, and you're not going to just easily just say, hey, let's just go out and, let's take a stroll and buy a car. It's a big decision. It's a big expense. But I've had guests on who say, it's a replacement cycle, too, of what we're seeing. Certainly some of it has to do with Sandy, but it's a replacement cycle. Their cars are getting old, and people need to kind of replace them. It's a lot of that going on.
Why does that matter, right? Like, see, this is what I don't get, right, is that America has a huge replacement cycle to go into with outside of cars. We're talking about things. If you look at the average age for the typical household durable good, it's the highest it's been since the 1950s. So this is something that extends beyond automobiles. It's something that extends to refrigerators, stovetops, microwaves.
So you say it doesn't matter. If they have to replace it, they have to replace it.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, we're also approaching, I don't think deleveraging is over, but we're approaching, no one can come here and honestly tell me that the pace of deleveraging is going to accelerate between now and next year. The pace of deleveraging, if anything, will moderate. And if, insofar as deleveraging has been a drag on growth, if the pace of deleveraging is moderating, that ostensibly means that it's a positive for growth.
Right.
Right? So, to me, that if the downside risks are dissipating, that means that the upside, prospect of stronger economic growth.
I'm going to have people emailing me saying, Neil's got to take off his rose-colored glasses. It's funny because you talk about...
I still have my pair right here in front of my keyboard.
About consumer spending, and David Rosenberg over at Gluskin Sheff has been on, and he said, look at what consumer spending is doing, though, in the services side of things. It's not that strong, and that's a bigger deal. We care more about the services spending that's going on, and that's not that strong and not that significant.
I don't disagree with that, but I think it's also very important to recognize why services spending has been weak. Services spending has been weak because rates of household formation have been depressed. But with the housing market rising, it's safe to assume that household formation is beginning to pick up. Not a lot, but a little bit. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if household formation's picking up, that means services related to housing will also pick up. Right? So, to me, it's this idea that the U.S. economy is going to be relegated to 1.5% or 2% growth, for the rest of your natural life, I think is just the wrong notion.
But it could be some time, Neil, because if
six months. So by this time next year...
So you're saying as you said, if Washington does what it needs to do, it's not front-loaded, they take their time. But we are going to have to take some pretty significant measures to get down our deficit. Are you going to say growth is going to come back so quickly that it's going to help out big time?
No. It depends what your time horizon is. Yeah. I don't dispute the fact that, look, the idea that the economy is going to slow in the first half of next year is a consensus opinion. What's not a consensus opinion is the fact that we're going to see a relatively meaningful acceleration in the back half of next year.
So you're just being contrarian?
I'm not being contrarian. I'm just pointing out something that no one else... I like to think of myself as a relatively decent economist, but it's of little value to your viewers for me to come on and just spit out a consensus view, right? So to me, it's no one disputes the fact that you'll have fiscal drag. It'll be a percentage point, and the first half will be weak, but the second half should be better.
Neil Dutta.
Listen to Bloomberg on the Economy weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.